Right. Let's welcome everybody again. A beautiful fall morning, 25th of September, 2022. And we're coming from the far stretches of the Northwest, the West Coast, really. We have our friends way up in Washington, San Juan Islands. Arnold coming to us from Southern Cal. This is a very unique experience.
Yeah.
And so welcome everybody, and those of you who are watching and listening to us by delayed recording. Well, we have embarked on a mission, pretty deep mission, to explore Romans, knowing Jesus as us. Let's continue to dive into the depths of Paul's doctrine of the evangel. We talked about God last week. What is he? Who is he? And I suggested the topic this morning was a term maybe that's unfamiliar to many of you, but is used in the concordant literal translation of Romans 1:18. You've had a chance to look at it.
We click on the link.
I linked you to the online version of the concordant if you don't have a physical copy. Paul says that God's indignation has been or is being, I like that present tense, is being revealed from heaven on all the irreverence. Now, I've not seen that term before. In your English Bibles, it says ungodliness. But I tend to think the word irreverence might be closer to what is really the issue or the root problem of all man's disorders. I don't know how you see that or if you've ever considered it. As I mentioned in my...
I guess you'd have to define disorders.
Okay.
Do you define that as sin?
Yeah, let me just give you a background. As I mentioned in my email, I spent long, boring hours and tedious study trying to achieve and did achieve a bachelor's in psychology. As I look more in God's word, listen to what God says, I wish I had known now what I know then. I wish I had known then what I know now. That's what you put it.
Yeah.
Which isn't very much. Now, what I know now is what I don't know. Anyway, if I'd have seen this, wow, it made a lot more sense trying to describe and trying to understand why people behave the way they do. Psychology has all kinds of, you say, disorders, David, and that's how they describe them. Dysfunction, disorders, abnormalities, all of those are terms in psychology to describe why man is not normal. He's either psychotic, neurotic. All these terms are terms that come out of psychology. God says there's one thing that's at the issue. He says it right off the bat. Irreverence. Now, what comes to your mind when you hear that term?
I actually pulled it up online, some definitions. I'll read a couple. Mm-hmm. Lack of due respect, veneration, disrespect, a disrespectful mark or act, lacking proper respect or seriousness.
Mm-hmm.
Irreverence in the Bible is godliness, not revering God. And that's about it. I mean, that's it's that theme over and over again. not showing the expected respect for an official, important, or holy things or mm-hmm. a person.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It comes to mind to me is irreverent. What does reverent mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Irreverent, the opposite of being reverent. All right. Mm. Now, to be irreverent, it means that there's someone or something to be revered.
Right.
If the condition of mankind is irreverence, then that means that he's not honoring or respecting someone who's of greater value, of greater importance than he. Now, why is that? Why is this the core issue of man's problem, or as we talked briefly last week, of some of the behaviors and lifestyles that seem to be so against nature? Why is irreverence at the core?
Well, as we are learning together that the condition of man is one with the Father by living in Jesus, as being mm-hmm. Jesus in us, and our mm-hmm. self is virtually non-existent in that the self of Jesus, who is one with the Father, therefore we're one with the Father. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
Somehow it's tied to Father.
Okay.
Irreverent.
Mm-hmm. It's tied to Father God.
The question you ask is what are we reverent to?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, you've read the first chapter, I'm sure all of you.
Mm-hmm.
What Paul says, everybody knows God. Everybody has known God. Did you notice that?
Yeah, there's no excuse. The nature it surrounds us.
I was taught in college, Bible, Sunday school on up through into seminary, that no one in the world, the problem is no one knows God.
Yeah.
Anybody agree with me on that?
Well, we do because of Jesus.
How's that?
We do know God through Jesus.
Mm-hmm. But the common teaching is that the problem with the world is that they don't know God. We have to go tell them about God. They need to hear about Jesus. They need to hear about God.
Hence the missionaries.
Yeah, this is the whole point of missionary effort, is to take the knowledge of God to the world, because the pagans don't know him. Is that true according to what Paul says?
Nope.
Isn't it fascinating? He establishes it right off the bat. Everybody knows God. From the primitive Indian to the aristocrat, everybody in the world, from a child, the minute you come into the world, you have this inherent knowledge of God. No comment.
Well, so I believe that's true. Therefore, irreverence, if I or any other person is irreverent, mm-hmm. it's not acknowledging that. It's mm-hmm. Either forgetting it or deliberately not mm-hmm. acknowledging.
Okay. How can you, from your own experience, have you always known God?
No. I mean, I forget. There's been periods in my life where that was a long ways away from my awareness.
See, as I say, I was told I didn't know God until I really studied, and I had to pursue certain courses in life to really begin to understand. I had to, like the famous J.I. Packer, I had to read his book, The Knowledge of the Holy, or Knowledge of God. There's Knowledge of the Holy is another author, but it wasn't until I could delve into his attributes and read about him that I had a knowledge of God. But Paul says, I already knew him. And so that puzzles me. How have I known God and not realized it? We're beginning to
good question.
Be a little too philosophical here.
Yeah. Well, there's been some, at least in my life, there's been points and times when I've deliberately just put that away out of my mind. Deliberately. Paid some price for it too.
Yeah. The latest Hollywood buzz is about Britney Spears has now claimed that she's an atheist.
Okay.
No longer acknowledges that there is a God. Mm-hmm. That should be earth-shaking.
Yeah.
So I imagine that has shaken up a lot of people, maybe her fans, I don't know. As a young boy, as I look back on it, I can begin to see there were times when I'd look up in the heavens and say, wow, you are there. Or I would see something else happen in the terms of a miracle, we would call a miracle, or something, an event in nature, like the transformation of a chrysalis into a butterfly, and say, wow. So there's little hints of God, you are there.
So Dennis, what about the American Indians? You know, their God is the tree, the deer, the fish, the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do you think? So their God is not necessarily Jesus, right? Or the Father. It's what the creation is more their God.
You know, to me, Jerry, the recognition, the basic recognition that there was or is what is commonly referred to in the Indian or the First Nations people's language, an originator, a creator, or a great spirit. And so there is this fundamental acknowledgement that there was something, someone who was arranging the universe. And now, how did they detect him and know him personally was the issue. That's where they needed to hear the evangel and understand, oh, this great spirit is better known as Jesus. And this is the point of missions, is that we don't try to convince people or the Indians that there is a God. They already know there is a God. Inherently, it's in them. They look up in the sky and they refer to him in a lot of different forms. But they really don't know how to really come to a personal knowledge without Christ. And that's should have been the point of mission.
Well, the times when I hear myself or many people say that, how could anyone deny that there's a God when you follow a baby from conception through the growth of their the 9 months of growth and then to be born and breathe and blink their eyes. And I mean, there's got to be a God. How could we deny that? And same thing with the way that the animals seek out their mate or keep a mate forever. There's a plan there that is beyond human.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. More and more we hear of scientists who are saying, okay, there is creative, there is, how do they say it? A designer or intelligent
design.
Intelligent mm-hmm.
design.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the
word? Yeah. Who was it? Even Darwin was in later in his life acknowledged there had to be some ulterior designer in some of the things that he was studying and looking at. And we look to him as the founder of evolution, which is contrary to the original design, that things are developed from random. But even Darwin, late in his life, has said to have acknowledged there are some things he could not explain. One of the things that really still puzzled scientists is the whole creation or the design of the human eye. Mm-hmm. Have you ever read that? Mm-hmm. That it's mm-hmm. so amazing how even the human eye works.
Mm-hmm.
How could that have randomly come together?
Yeah.
Okay. So Paul is saying, everybody knows God. He says, it's known of God, which is apparent among them, for God manifests it to them. So everywhere God is showing himself, his invisible attributes are described, in other words, declared, emphasized from the creation of the world, being apprehended by his achievements, besides his imperceptible power and divinity, to the point where these people, there's no defense. There's no, the Bible, the English King James says, no excuse. There's no defense for a person who wants to say, no, there's no God. He has no way to defend that proposition. There's too many things that are absolutely for sure.
Thank you.
The fact that God is every day manifesting himself to his creation. Why would he have to do that? Shouldn't we already know? Should creation already know who his creator is?
Tells me he wants to be known.
Yeah. This God that we know has a tremendous desire to be recognized and known. Mm-hmm. And he continually throws things our way, shows himself in multitudes of ways to constantly assure us. And the thing that will happen, Paul says, and later we'll see in Romans 8:21, that in the end, all creation will come to know who their creator is through the sons of God. That's us. We will reveal to all creation. They will finally see without any doubt, because the created world doesn't have a conscience, or as far as we know, brains. We're the only ones that have been created with a brain, with intelligence, with conscience. So it's up to us to help the rest of the world understand who really is God. So none of us here today have any excuse or any defense in claiming there isn't a God, or that you don't know him.
I think, Dennis, with my spiritual life, I do get complacent at times, you know, where you just kind of take things for granted, and then something pops up and gets your attention. And I just feel, you know, that's maybe God's way of working with us and through us and in us. And but that complacency kind of sets in every once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree, you know, and probably more so with some people than others, you know, have to deal with that more. But so developing a strong faith and trust is sure a big part of it, as far as I'm concerned.
So Jerry, me too. The complacency sets in, but then I'm just drawn to being reminded that that I am one with Christ. It's like an attraction or something within me that brings me back to that point. And these days, more times more than less.
See, as we look out into the creation, into the world, there are so many things that we see that should bring, honor and thanks. And as we say, a reverence. Like, God is awesome. There's just very few words to really fully describe him. Bible teachers have tried to describe what they call the attributes of God, as I said earlier, but all really tend to fall short in really coming to a full description. In fact, it's impossible, I think, to really fully describe God. Otherwise, it'd be like putting him in a box. He's impossible to define fully. There's no way. So, but that is in us, each of us. There's this awareness. There's this something deep in us that says, oh yeah, yeah, God, you're there. You're behind all this. You're in all this. And remember, we've talked about God all in all. And again, that will be the thing that everyone will acknowledge in the end. God will be all in all.
Yeah.
He is already, but he's not in countless thousands, millions of people's minds. He's not all in all. Now, if he's all in all, and we have no excuse, we actually have to deliberately make a choice with this.
So, Dennis, is it even with deliberately making a choice, is it humanly possible to really get to that point and stage in our life where really all in all is with us all the time? I mean, is that humanly possible?
To understand it, Jerry, or to
well, not no, I totally understand it, but to have every situation as, you know, person or circumstance or whatever comes up, to have that be your the way you operate, 24/7, which would be all in all. Are we able to do that? Is that
from personal feeling, Jerry, I think that I don't know, or I don't grasp it enough. And I think more and more as I grow in that revelation,
mm-hmm.
or he gives me that revelation, I understand mm-hmm. it a bit more, but I like you, I don't know that I'm not there.
Yeah. I have a real desire for it. And
oh,
I
yeah.
pray about it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. And you know, it's our human nature. I don't know, you know, because there's a lot of times I slip away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the knee-jerk reaction, and Joan used to have accuse me of having a special word for that, on a knee-jerk reaction, you know. So I've tried to wipe that out of there, but but anyway, you know, I have both of it. We just, that all in all thing that you presented to us a few years back is just mm-hmm. It just makes so much sense. And
yeah
you know,
and you see that's the perspective that we're growing in. That's the revelation that's unfolding in our spirits.
Mm-hmm.
God is ever present here now, all in all.
Yeah.
And that's not the perspective that unfortunately we grew up in, or were trained in our Christian formation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what we're learning is that we've been missing it. Our theology is so inadequate.
Mm-hmm.
Here's, I said deliberate choice. Here's what Paul says. God's indignation is being revealed from heaven on all irreverence and injustice of men who are retaining the truth in injustice. In other words, they're deliberately choosing not to acknowledge. That's the core of our irreverence.
Mm-hmm.
I know the truth, but I will not admit it. I will not acknowledge it. In fact, I'm going to choose the opposite.
Mm.
I'm going to refuse to acknowledge and give reverence and respect to God. Now, the question is, why is this in the core of man's problems and disorders? Because as we see in this chapter, this is where it begins and then unfolds in various levels of, as psychologists would say, abnormal behavior, abnormal lifestyle, unnatural living.
Mm-hmm.
It all comes back to this issue.
Well, it all comes back to the tree of knowledge.
Yes. Yes.
Where we all started.
Mm-hmm.
But to know that is not, that we actually can live in the tree of life.
Mm-hmm.
The tree of knowledge, that's not an issue anymore. Once you make that commitment or awareness that
mm-hmm.
you're, that, you know, we live in the tree of life now.
Mm-hmm.
And now, actually, all people do, they just don't realize it.
Okay, yes. Let's go back to that, Arnold. So the tree of life had an opposite in the tree of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam, until he was told that he wasn't to eat of the other, he didn't realize there was an opposite. But let's rehearse in our minds, what's the difference? What is the tree of life, first of all? They were free to eat that tree, consume as much as they wanted of the tree of life. And we're talking about Adam and Eve in the garden.
Well, who is life? Jesus says, I'm the way, okay. the truth, and the life.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is living in one oneness with
mm-hmm.
God,
mm-hmm.
or Father through Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
That's now, what
the first man is created in the image and likeness of God.
Right.
All right. And then see, everything then begat, like begets like. So man is in like with God. Lions are in like with lions. So everything else, creation down the line, everything has a likeness. In other words, a path of progeneration. We're the only ones in creation to have the likeness with God. So Adam enjoyed a likeness. There was this oneness. There was this. He was the image bearer of God. One with God, portraying who God is. And as he went through the garden, he functioned as that expression of the Father, of God, Creator. He and God were walking in complete harmony. And you might say Adam referred to God as his very life. He was his source. He was everything. He and God were so entwined in who they were, and who Adam was and who God is. How do you know God? Look at yourself. Someone has said, how can I ever know God? Well, know yourself. If you know yourself, then you're going to know God. That's the tree of life perspective.
And yet deception set in.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Deception. Can you unfold that or unpack that a little bit more, Arnold? What is that deception?
Well, it's deception that we are not one with God, and we can know the difference. Well, that's all good to non-point, you know,
mm-hmm.
Because you know, it just separates us with God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Until Christ came along, that there wasn't hope for being one with God once we went down that rabbit trail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you can say it was Satan's fault, but you know, doggone it, was our fault.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Satan wasn't cursed alone.
Yeah.
Adam was cursed too. So the opposite tree, the opposite perspective, yeah, is, as you said, God, we're separate from God. That we have our own ability to make choices.
Mm-hmm.
We can actually live without God if we take it to the extreme.
Okay, but is that possible? Can anyone be? Can anyone live without God?
Well,
not if it's not His will.
If God is all in all, no,
it's impossible.
Yeah.
There's nowhere that you can exist in the universe without God. You are in God. In fact, make a note here. To go back and study Acts 17, if you want a theology where Paul declares pretty definitively his theology of God, he expressed it to the professors and great philosophers that he engaged in Athens. Now, Athens was the pinnacle of man's efforts to philosophize about life and all the gods in life. And then Paul encountered them. Remember the story? He walked up to an idol that says to an unknown God. And you can read his dialogue there, where he describes that all of us exist and have our being in God. That's Paul's theology of God. That's tree of life. That's the truth. Now, how do you deal when you don't like that? What do you do? You have to actually go against what you know is actually true. You make a conscious decision to say, no, I don't want to agree with that. That's the tree of knowledge. No, I will not agree to the fact that I am one with God. And so the alternative is what? Anything that thinks itself that it's outside of God, what is that?
Tree of knowledge, I guess.
Well, yeah. Anything that does not believe that it's that God is the source and everything exists in God, the opposite is to believe that nothing is the absence of life, is what do we want to call?
We're back to where we started. It's irreverent.
It's to believe that you can exist outside of God when nothing does. That's the same as death. That's why God said, when you eat of that tree, your eyes will be open, you will die. Anything not God is death. See that? What's the opposite of life?
Hurt, dark.
Yeah.
Darkness, death, lifeless, void. But that's what men are choosing they're choosing to oppose the truth that everything exists in God, or saying, no, I don't want to accept that. The alternative then is to accept if.
So Dennis, Satan's in the picture there somewhere too, right?
Oh yeah, he's the one, remember, is our beloved Norman Grubb calls him God's convenient agent. Because remember, everything has an opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you know what's right without the opposite? That's the whole plan behind God's thinking. God's got a plan here. All right, I'm going to show you what's true. I'm going to allow you I'm going to convince you that there's an opposite. And when you see the opposite is, wow, is destruction, death, then that makes you believe in the truth that much more. I told you that I spent years and years in getting a bachelor's of psychology. Now I'm realizing, whoa, opposite. But because of what I know in psychology, helps me know all but that much more about the truth of God. So it's not in vain.
Yeah, that's good.
All right. But what's the opposite of life in God?
Death.
Yeah.
Yeah. Death, destruction. You see where this is at the core of all of the dysfunction, disorder, the degenerate of life is right here in this one decision. Now, one thing about this, you may not have, well, I didn't choose that. Well, but you and I were born into that.
Dennis, what exactly, the word perish comes up in the Bible quite often.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What would you say the definition of perish for, it mentions that quite often, and the meaning of to perish?
Yeah. I think there's different application to the word perish. Obviously means no life, or to stop living. Okay, so we're going to die in these physical bodies. So that's the sense of, that is in one sense perishing.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to perish in your spirit?
Mm. Oh, I don't know.
Can you kill a spirit? A spirit can't, is not bound by our space-time dimensions or continuum.
Spirit, so you don't have a live or dead spirit.
A spirit is, yeah, it may not be functioning. The Bible says unregenerate spirit. In other words, it's in a dormant state, or how do we call it? Well, just not functioning properly.
Well,
but the Bible says, whosoever believes in him shall not perish.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That doesn't mean total annihilation. It's a good question, Jerry. What I see in that is that your spirit will be fully functioning and alive. You won't be dormant and unresponsive.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't acknowledge what we already know to be true, what's the alternative?
Well, to use Jerry's word, perish. We don't live in life. Jesus is life. We are life. We cannot perish in that paradigm.
And we'll, as we go on through this, we'll see. Here are some of the things that happens in verse 21. Knowing God not as God, do they glorify and thank him, but vain were they made in their reasonings. Futile thinking, futile intelligence.
I like the next part. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools.
Yeah. We're made stupid. See, this has opened my eyes into people who are either addicted or living in alternate lifestyles. You look, you know, the tendency and what I was raised in Christian, traditional Christian theology was that these people are to be shunned. You are to not associate, feel no compunction toward, and in some cases actually hate. The old term coming out of the Old Testament was, these lifestyles are an abomination to God. God hates them. And we touched on that last week. Does God hate these people?
Well, that's an interesting thing, because if God is love, how can, where does hate come in to God is love?
Mm-hmm.
Or if I am love, where does hate really come in?
Now, people will say, well, I was born this way, or this is who I am. I'm created this way, or this is a result of things that I had no choice about. Is that what God says?
My dad was an alcoholic, and you know, I just had no choice. I'm an alcoholic too.
Mm-hmm.
Not me, but I mean, it doesn't have to be an alternate, what we normally consider an alternate lifestyle.
Yeah. Did you have any choice in the matter? Did he have any choice in the matter?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
This is the thing that I ponder and here grapple with this, my brothers, sisters. God, but vain were they made in their reasonings. They were made stupid. Verse 24, wherefore God gives them over. That doesn't sound like I have much to say about it. See, again, at the core of the issue here is thinking that I am independent from God. I like things about God and I'll try to be like him, but it's my own life. And once that starts, God says, okay.
Let's see how that works.
Here you go. I'm giving you to that.
Yeah. Except that I'm accepting that and doing that.
Mm-hmm.
God isn't doing it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Or is he? I don't think so.
Well, when it says he gives them over.
Does that mean he, certainly he allows it. I can go down that rabbit trail,
mm-hmm.
but it's me deciding to go.
Yeah. So let's go back to another fundamental question. I realize this is really hurting our brains here this morning. And so have to forgive me. All right, guys. Do we really have choice in our life? I don't know that. I expect any kind of a succinct answer here. This is something I want you to ponder.
By choice, yes. Do you mean free will?
Okay, yeah. Do we have free will? See, it's the answer.
Yes.
Huh?
Yeah.
Okay. The answer to that, I believe, is tied up into this question. Of again, the two trees. Now, obviously, God gave the two trees opposites, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we assume from that picture gives us the assumption that man has a choice. Does he really? If we say man has a free will, excuse me, what are we saying? Aren't we saying man is independent from God?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's only one chooser in the universe. There's only one self in the universe. And that's what the tree of life was portraying. One self. Adam was linked as his self was God. God's self was Adam. Both, either way, there was one self. By the way, you know, that's why there couldn't be two selves in the garden. There's only room for one self. That's why Adam had to be evicted.
Dennis, are we getting to the point that man does not have free will underneath it all?
Okay. This is a very deep question, and I'm not sure that we can succinctly answer
it. Barry looks like he has the answer.
But here's
if we don't have free will, then
the world would be perfect. There would be no strife. There would be no anger. There'd be no malice. There'd be none of this stuff going on.
Well, okay. Wasn't that the way Christ, God created us back in the Garden of Eden?
Okay, so here's an illustration of how this works. I find for myself no better illustration than Jesus in the garden that night, struggling with all of the tendencies to want to escape the impending death that he knew was coming in the next hours. I mean, what man would not want to run and flee, right? So he's in agony. It's tearing him up. No, he does not want to die. Everything in him chooses not to, right? Inherent in the human psyche is this power of being able to have my own choice, my own will. But what does he say?
Not mine, but yours, will.
See, and what was Christ embodying? If you see me, you see the Father. What he was illustrating was how a man could live in total unity with the Father, giving reverence to the Father, the tree of, and operating within the tree of life, yet he was a human. And he says, not my will, but yours. Now you can say, well, he gave up his self. No, he aligned himself with the one true self of the universe, the one who has the choice. Now, I know this this is deep in the weeds, and I'm sorry.
That's good.
My desire is that we grasp more and more how much. I can't even describe because it's so profound how much we understand the operation of all in all, living in the tree of life perspective, Christ as us. What does that mean in terms of our choosing and our own will? How do we see life? Do we see it through God's lens or ours? And the opposite of that, what is the opposite of that? And what does that entail when we choose to operate from our own will, from our own desires? Yeah. God says that's death. Goes nowhere. It's vain. It's futile. Lifeless. So when we say, I don't believe the truth, we're being irreverent. The opposite of that, God says there's only two ways you can go here. All right. If you don't believe the truth, then this is your other destiny. This is what you've, the alternate. Now, I hope this encourages you. <It's great. laughs> I don't want us to leave on a sour note here this morning.
Not well, Dennis, a real encouragement to me.
Dennis, when you toss all these things at us like today, then you got to expect a lot of questions.
Yeah, right, Jerry. Bring it on. let me just level with you. These are deep, fundamental questions. I don't want to pretend that I have all the answers. I know how to ask the questions. But God is revealing more and more to us. And this is my motive in the questioning, in the conversation. I believe that he enlightens us and we see little glimpses. He's unlocked this for me. When I begin to question, God, what do you mean by irreverence? And it's dawning on me. There's no psychological disorder here, as if it's man's sickness of his own soul. This is going at the very heart and the fundamental problem of all humanity. We live in a cursed world because we are cursed to that alternate perspective, which is it's going to be right. It's fraught from with problems right from the very beginning. Okay, so questioning and looking and probing deeper, we're understanding hopefully more and more of the life that we have as Christ, mm-hmm. and why that's so profound and so important.
Well, you can sure see how, on a world level, how out of sync things are with, you know, Russia and Ukraine. And, you know, I mean, there's an example of going totally off the wall, out of bounds.
Yeah, you know? Gary, it's all a product of the curse, isn't it?
Yeah.
We live, unfortunately, in a cursed universe, in a cursed world. And I look at people who with deviant lifestyles, and I should be reminded, they didn't choose this. This is cursed. Yeah. They're cursed. God help them. God save them.
Yeah.
I can't hate them. I have to pity. I have to mourn for them. I have to intercede for them. Right?
Yeah.
To me, it's we're all cursed.
Well, yeah.
It's just not. I think it's everyone.
It is. And David, the hope, the evangel is that Christ has come to reverse the curse. That's what he did. And by faith, we live in that hope, in that expectation that we can live above. Yes, we live in a cursed world. Our own bodies are cursed, but we can live in the grace and power above that curse. All right. The curse is like gravity. It'll always be there. That's a fact of life, always pulling us down. But once we learn how to go airborne, we live above the curse, don't we? We live
above. That's where all in all kicks in, right?
I mean, exactly. The more we understand, wait a minute. Yes, I live in a cursed world, but I don't have to accept this. This is not who I am.
Yeah.
Wow, guys, deep stuff. Thank you for having patience with me.
Well, thank you, Dennis.
This is good.
Hope it opens more eyes, more revelation. All right, and so we'll plow on and see what else we can tangle or chew on.
Yeah,
this is good. Very good.
All right, guys, have a great week. Enjoy Orcas up there,
Gundorps.
Yeah,
and you sunny Californians.
Thanks,
all right,
Dennis.
Everybody. All right, grace and peace.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.